Chapter 12. Imperfection. Fabius stood, ramrod straight, on the starboard observation deck, watching the tides of the Empyrean wash across the hull of the Vesalius. The ship was humming to itself. Every deck plate and bulkhead was reverberating gently with the sound. Occasionally, lances of silent destruction thrummed from the forward turrets to destroy the debris that hove into the frigate's path. The crumbled remnants of forgotten worlds and lost ships, lost to the tides of the warp in centuries past, or even decades yet to come. It was hard to tell how long it had been since they'd left Harmony, passing in and out of the webway as they were. His armor's chronometer flickered with random numbers, or things that were not numbers at all. He'd long since grown used to losing time, but at the moment it bothered him. Anxiety ate away at his calm like a slow acid. He thought of the infant. No, the child, sitting quietly, hidden away in his laboratorium. So far, the clone showed no sign of abnormality, no sign of the mutations that had afflicted so many of his previous attempts. That in itself made him cautious. The clone had been slumbering since he'd been driven from Harmony by Abaddon. It had spent centuries gestating, down in the dark. It seemed improbable, if not impossible. And yet, it was aware, perfect, Fulgrim as he must have been millennia ago. Or, perhaps, Fulgrim as he was always meant to be. The thought ricocheted around his head, knocking his certainty off course. Destiny was an excuse used by lesser men. Only purpose mattered. But this occurrence had disturbed those once iron-hard assumptions. The poet in him could not help but see some grand intent in the discovery. And that frustrated him to no end, for it modelled things. Without clarity came indecision. He hoped that his uncertainty was simply the lingering effects of his encounter with the Quaestor. His mind still ached from its psychic assault. He suspected that was part of the point. Trust Eidolon to debilitate others in order to maintain whatever perceived supremacy he clung to, rather than rising to the challenge. But Fabius was made of sterner stuff. His mind was a citadel, and one not so easy to conquer as all that.
"Oh, so one can hope," he muttered.
He watched the shattered hull of an ancient warship tumble slowly past, its identity lost beneath a skim of frost and ash. Lights flared within it, and he noted that its remaining turret tracked the passing Vesalius warily. It was not unusual to find such wrecks inhabited by the descendants of their crews, or even the original crew itself, preserved like insects in amber by the restless tides of the warp. A foul smell intruded on his reverie, and the deck creaked beneath a great weight. He called out,
"The hardiness of the species confounds even me at times." "It is why the gods prize us so, I think,"
Korag said as he stumped onto the deck.
"We can be bent into ever so many shapes with so little effort."
Fabius glanced at him.
"There is an archaeo market of some infamy near here, though I have forgotten its name, nestled within the bowels of some ponderous hulk, long since amalgamated with others of its kind. Whole kingdoms exist within that wreck, warring and trading with each other, as well as the occasional visitor. It beggars belief." "Humans are wonderfully tenacious."
Fabius smiled.
"Yes, so I hope. This vessel seems to have joined Eidolon's fleet,"
Korag rumbled, joining Fabius at the observation port.
"I see his warriors everywhere."
Since they had left Harmony's orbit, the lumbering apothecary had ventured rarely from his lair near the hydroponics bay. Like Arian and Skarlagrim, he had a small laboratorium hidden away aboard the ship, where he conducted his own studies in private.
"A temporary alliance. Do they see it that way?" "How they see it is of no concern to me," Fabius said stiffly. They will be gone soon enough, and we can concern ourselves with more important matters.
Such as...
Fabius hesitated. There were few among the consortium he actually trusted. Arian, Sakara, if only because of the dead man's switch in his body, and possibly Korag. The former Grave Warden had been an attentive student, though his focus was distressingly narrow. Then, perhaps, that was to his credit in this regard.
Gene seed, he said finally.
That hardly seems important. More like business as usual.
Pure gene seed.
Korag stiffened.
That is interesting.
He leaned forward. The miasma that seeped from the hoses and pipes of his armor mildewed the viewport, spotting it with black mold.
In return for what?
Nothing. It is what we are being sent to collect.
Are we errand boys, then?
Fabius smiled thinly.
So Eidolon thinks. I saw no reason to disabuse him of that notion, not when it serves my interest to do otherwise.
And you think he has not considered that as well? I recall hunting the Khan's sons with Eidolon in our wayward youth. He was most cunning.
Hence Flavius and his warriors taking up precious space on my ship.
Fabius leaned on Torment. A knot of pain had been growing in him since they'd left Harmony. The ache was persistent and familiar. It had become such a part of him that he almost missed it in that brief period between death and dissolution. The chirurgeon chimed interrogatively, but he dismissed it. He could function on his own for a while longer, at least.
They are here to keep my feet to the path Eidolon has laid out.
Korag chuckled.
A losing battle, if ever there was one.
Indeed. But we can deal with them easily enough when the time comes.
Fabius watched the stars, spinning in a sea of hateful colour. Motes of sickly light piercing mauve gas clouds. Distant coronas swirled like the eyes of hidden gods, peering through holes in the shroud of the universe. The stars formed unrecognizable, nonsensical constellations that even his transhuman sight found difficult to perceive.
It is beautiful in its way.
So I have always thought.
Korag looked down at him.
What are you planning to do with the gene seed?
Fabius glanced at him.
What do you think? Use it, obviously. For what?
Fabius hesitated.
I haven't decided yet, but better it remain in my hands than to waste it on Eidolon's petty warmongering.
It would make a fine sacrifice, were you of a mind. Such a prize would earn the favor of the gods for whosoever brought it to them. Lesser men might seek apotheosis on the back of such a thing.
Fabius snorted.
I am in no hurry to die, Korag, and that is what apotheosis is. Death. Death of psyche. Death of free will.
He thought of what Sakara had said and quickly brushed it aside. In the cold light of day, it was nonsense.
That which is not dead may eternal strive.
Korag murmured, as if reading his mind.
Or so the sons of Lorgar are wont to say in their piety.
Eternal strife may appeal to some, but I have a higher purpose,
Fabius said loftily.
One that is more important than the affections of any imaginary deity.
Never doubt that Grandfather loves you, Fabius.
Korag said slyly.
For that is his way. You are no less his child than Bellicose Typhus, though you have never bent knee at his altars. That illness you strive against so mightily, It is a gift.
A gift? I am rotting on the bone.
Yes, and were that not the case, would you have accomplished half of what you have done? Or would you have descended into decadence with the rest of your brothers?
Korag gave a wheezing chuckle.
I think not. Then perhaps I am wrong. How much blood will your followers spill, do you think? Enough to satiate Khorne? How many schemes do you weave? An intricate latticework of plot and counterplot. How strongly do you hope, Fabius?
Fabius turned away. Sakara had said something similar. To hear it again, and from Korag, made him uneasy.
Madness!
As he watched, the stars seemed to take on the outline of a vast, chortling face. Only for a moment, and it was gone in the blink of an eye. But it had existed long enough to leave him feeling even more disconcerted.
Truth,
Korag shrugged.
Then they are often one and the same, as you yourself have noted. We all feed the gods, Fabius, whether we like it or not. Even if you are right, and they are nothing more than eddies in the great psychic ocean, they are still potent. Why then do you resist what they offer? Because what they offer is not freely given,
Fabius said.
It is a bargain, as Horus discovered to his cost, and Fulgrim before him. There is no true benevolence to that cosmic miasma you so childishly refer to as grandfather. It is simply a disharmony, a discordant note in the music of the spheres.
He bared his teeth at his reflection in the surface of the observation port. He was looking drawn and starved, though still healthy for the moment. His body had begun to devour itself from within.
An imperfection.
Korag was silent for long moments. Then he laughed, a soft, liquid sound, like a boil popping, almost gentle in its good humour.
Only you would see that as a flaw.
He tapped a rust-riddled knuckle against the surface of the observation port.
It is the flaw in the thing that makes it interesting, Fabius. A song without mistakes is just noise.
It was Fabius's turn to laugh.
And only a sour pustule like yourself would claim that mistakes are art. The universe is like clockwork, Korag. Innumerable cogs and gears clicking along in perfect harmony. But if something slips, if a gear wears down, it puts stress on the entire mechanism. These gods you serve, they are that stressor, that slipped gear. Entropy, given a face and a name by half-wits. Better to embrace entropy than resist it, Fabius. A man cannot turn back the tide. No, but he can divert it. He can build a dam. Failing that, he can move out of its way.
Fabius looked at Korag.
It is too late for you. You've already drowned, but my head is still above water, Korag. Perhaps, but for how long, my friend?
Korag asked. He laid a heavy hand on Fabius's shoulder plate, but only for a moment. The chirurgeon didn't like it when others got too close. A whirring bone drill swung towards the Death Guard's face, but didn't strike. Such a drill could cut through even tactical dreadnought armor. Korag stepped back, slowly, carefully.
Long enough, Fabius said. Until my work is done.
Merix sat in the dark, watching several of his warriors make use of the training cages. He had not trained in some time. His muscles ached for lack of exertion. But he could not stir himself to the effort. So instead he sat and resisted the urge to look at the pale things that danced just out of the corner of his eye. He ignored their whispers and their feather-light caresses as they tried to attract his attention. Neverborn haunted the corridors of the Vesalius. They were weak things, claimed by no god, and hungry for adulation. He thought they were akin to parasites nestling in the belly of a great beast. Sometimes they made themselves bodies out of cast-off flesh or forgotten machinery and became nuisances. Then they were purged with fire and blade. Otherwise, they were ignored, like the weather. The air hummed with a crash of blades and soft, panting voices. There were no slaves here, no indulgences of the flesh. Chemical delights, to be sure, but those were strictly regulated. Only strength mattered, and skill. He watched, and they knew that he watched. And so they performed ever more deadly feats of skill, seeking to impress him. He snorted. Why they did so, he could not fathom. But he accepted their respect, for it was dangerous to cast aside such gifts when they were offered. Something the Clone Lord ought to have learned long before now. He caught sight of Belephus, slouched down among the cages, ostensibly waiting his turn. The gutter poet gave no sign that he noticed that he was being observed, but Merix knew better. Belephus rarely went anywhere save under Savona's orders. She was spying on him. He smiled thinly and flexed his hand. She would make her move soon. She had no patience. He almost looked forward to the inevitable confrontation. They'd clashed before, during their service to Kasparos Telmar. The Radiant King had encouraged such brutality among his subordinates. The chief apothecary didn't, but that rarely stopped Savona. She would kill him, unless he killed her first. He wasn't sure which outcome he preferred, just yet.
"You do not train with them,"
Merix turned. Flavius Alkanex stood nearby, his helmet under one arm, his hand resting on the pommel of his sword. The hero, triumphant. Merix looked away.
"No."
"You are in command,"
Alkanex said, joining Merix. The prefect had been wandering the decks of the frigate for days, learning the lay of the land, speaking with this squad commander or that warrior. Merix had avoided him thus far, but it seemed the moment was at hand, whatever his desires.
"Nominally,"
Merix said.
"They speak of you respectfully."
Merix laughed.
"You are a bad liar."
Alkanex gestured dismissively.
"I do not lie."
"Then they do."
Merix flexed his bionic hand.
"What do you want?"
He asked the question more out of politesse than curiosity. He knew the answer already.
"To talk. To speak of what is and what might be."
A guttural laugh slithered through the grill of Merix's respirator.
"Savona is the one you wish to speak to. I am beyond caring about such things these days."
Alkanex frowned. "She is not of the Legion."
"There is no Legion."
Merix turned away. His hand was beginning to ache again. Sharp claws of pain dug into the meat of him.
"There is just us. What do you want?"
"It is beyond time that the 12th millennial rejoined the Legion. I am here to make that happen. You should not be wasting your days playing servant for a lunatic."
Alkanex looked around, the ghost of a sneer on his face.
"A lunatic who was, is, Lieutenant Commander of our Legion."
The wispy shapes crept closer, moving between the dust motes which drifted through the glare of the lumens. He could more easily discern their hissing recriminations just at the edge of his hearing.
"Was," Alkanex said firmly. "Any claim he had to that position is long gone. The Legion has moved on without him, and good riddance."
"And who will take his place? You?"
Alkanex laughed.
"Perhaps."
He peered at Merix.
"I know you, Merix.
You were equerry to Lord Commander Hellespawn before Eidolon took his head at Uliensis. You proved yourself competent enough in his service.
Damned with faint praise. You serve Eidolon.
I have that honour.
Does Eidolon desire the broken remnants of our humble company so badly, then? There are scarce 100 of us left. We're not even half strength.
Alkanex nodded. Which is why you need help. Swear yourself to Eidolon's service, and you will flourish, as you never could have with Kasparos Telmar, or with Fabius Bile. Merix studied him. Alkanex made a good show of earnestness, but Merix could detect the note of falsehood. This was not Oleander's dream of a restored legion, but something new, something more savage. He missed Oleander. The apothecary had been a scheming fool, but he'd had some shred of honour left to him. He'd wanted the same things Merix had, though it was rare that he admitted it. They'd believed in the same ghosts, the false perfection of the Legion as it had been, rather than as it was. He glanced down at his hand, and the strange new nerves growing within the metal. It would be a new thing soon, in a few centuries. The Neverborn pressed close, their whispers drowning out the sound of blades from the training cages. He looked back up at Alkanex.
Tell me more.
Savona studied the entrance to the laboratorium with distaste. It was not so large as the one Fabius maintained in the apothecarium, but it was large enough to contain the bulk of its current master, as well as his diverse experiments. Even from where she stood down the corridor, the miasmic stench was overpowering. Two, this stretch of passage was badly affected by whatever horrors were growing within the chamber. Stretches of mould crept along the internal bulkheads and hung glistening from the conduits above. Pipes had rusted through and burst, releasing a persistent humidity into the corridor. Deck plates buckled back from their frames like peeling scabs, and lumens flickered oddly beneath patinas of grease. Two mutants stood on guard to either side of the hatch, holding crudely fashioned glaives in their bandaged paws. Both were covered in sores and scabrous lesions beneath the worn plates of their armour. They wore ragged robes and heavy rebreathers, which hissed intermittently as poison air circulated through diseased lungs. Savona wanted to get inside the laboratorium, but the guards would seek to prevent her, whatever her status. The apothecaries of the consortium valued their privacy, and their servants would fight to the death to protect it. Still, two mutants would be hardly any trouble at all. She lifted her maul and prepared to confront the guards. A sudden strong odour choked her as her heavy hand fell on her shoulder. So intent had she been on the guards that she'd failed to hear the grinding tread of the laboratorium's master. For an instant, she regretted leaving Belephus to watch over Merix's movements.
A visitor! How unexpected!
She was spun about and pinned to the wall, a wide hand about her throat.
I so rarely receive guests.
Korag Singe studied her with rheumy eyes. His helmet was clamped to his leg, exposing a wasted skull nestled in a thicket of hosepipes and circulation units. Jets of opaque gas vented from the pressure valves implanted in his hollow cheeks, creating an oily halo about his withered head. Limp strands of colourless hair were plastered to his scalp or were tangled amid the hoses. Blackened teeth showed in a lipless grin.
Ah, the warrior woman.
His grip tightened slightly.
Why are you here? Is there some service you wish of me? A weaponized pestilence, perhaps? Or a subtle nerve agent of some sort? I assure you, my price is always fair.
No, I came to talk.
Savona had to stand on the tips of her hooves to avoid being throttled. He was far stronger than she'd suspected. It wasn't simply the tactical dreadnought armour he wore, but something more intrinsic. A fell strength, bought through devotion. Like her, Korak had long ago made a choice, and like her, that choice was stamped on his face for all the galaxy to see. That was why she had come to him first. The faithful could only trust one another. Korak studied her for a moment and then released her.
Very well. Come.
He lumbered past her towards his laboratorium. The mutants fell to their hands and knees, groaning in greeting. Korak patted one's head as the hatch cycled open. A noxious cloud emerged, wafting through the corridor. Savona gagged and drew a perfumed rag made from the woven hair of an Eldar from her armor and pressed it to her mouth and nose. The laboratorium beyond more resembled a toxic sump than a place of discovery. Unsteady stacks of canisters leaked acidic fluids across the scarred deck plates, and the reinforced walls were pitted and marked by corrosive agents. Power cables had been yanked from the ceiling and crudely spliced into rusty generators, and sections of pipe and hose had been excised from ruptured sections of the wall and connected to burbling chem units. There was a layer of grime and mold covering almost everything. Fruiting bodies clustered in alcoves and recesses. The fungi were vibrantly hued and distastefully fleshy, even to Savona's sensibilities. Korak's beast, Pazuz, bounded into view, knocking over canisters and bubbling alembic towers in its haste. The demon beast slobbered over its master, snuffling and grunting in greeting. Its eye stalks swiveled towards her, and it made as if to leap playfully upon her, before Korak caught it by the scruff of its flabby neck. He tossed the beast aside, as if it weighed no more than a feather.
No! Go play with the Nurglings!
Pazuz made a sound halfway between a growl and a groan, before gambling after a number of tiny, fat shapes, disturbed from their hiding places by its landing. The little creatures scuttled away, giggling eerily. Savona grimaced.
Foul little blobs! How can you get anything done with them around?
How can you not?
Korak retorted. He set his helmet on an examination slab and began to decouple hoses from the nodes in his neck and skull. They spurted gases into the moist air, and he sighed.
That's better.
He looked at her.
What do you want?
As I said, to talk.
On what topic? Not plagues, I'd guess.
She waved a hand in front of her face, trying to dispel some of the murk drifting down from above her. Sensors hung from the ceiling, spewing thick clouds of softly glowing spores into the murky air. Swarms of fat-bodied flies hummed listlessly through the spore clouds, dancing in slow, strange circles.
Treachery.
Ah, a most bilious broth indeed, but not one to my taste these days.
He turned away.
However, I am pleased to see that you are making your move at last. Fabius will be disappointed, of course. He wagered you'd wait at least another decade. But I said to myself, no, there's a warrior with ambition.
You wagered on it?
She didn't know why it surprised her so. The members of the consortium, diverse as they were utterly mad. She shook her head.
Never mind. The treachery is not mine.
Then whose?
Alkenex,
she said, not looking at him.
He's up to something.
Yes. And?
She glared at him.
He spent the time since we left Harmony agitating among Thalopsis' old cronies. They're still hurt feelings from the Manflayer's curt conclusion to their game. He is moving against the Lieutenant Commander.
Korak nodded.
Of course he is. That is part of the game.
He chuckled wetly.
Rest assured that Fabius is already aware of the Prefect's intentions.
He pointed a thick finger at her.
The question is, whose side are you on?
My own, as always.
It was always prudent to determine who was on what side before making your loyalties known. That Alkanex had not come to her yet, when he had visited so many others, was nothing short of an insult. While the Manflayer was no more pleasant to Commander, at least he had the courtesy to regard her as a threat.
A good answer. A strong answer. The gods love strength and despise weakness, save where it leads to some advantage.
He grunted phlegmatically.
The gods love him more than any of us, I suspect.
He chortled and shook his head.
A funny thing, that. Then Horus was an unbeliever as well, and Mortarian too, at least at first. They say there are none so fierce as a convert.
Savona nodded, thinking of her own transformation.
What is he planning?
Planning? Nothing. He waits, as always. When the moment comes, he will act.
He turned back to the examination slab. The equipment there was a mouldy, rusty mess, but still somehow functional. Greasy alembics began to bobble as he worked.
And will you act with him?
If he requires.
Why?
The question came unbidden to her lips. She had come to test the waters, but now found herself drawn deeper than she had intended.
Why do you follow him? What can he offer you?
Knowledge, child. There is no keener mind in this galaxy than that sour chunk of meat that occupies his skull. He has forgotten more about the inner workings of man and Xenos alike than any other apothecary has ever known. I came to him to learn how to craft new and better contagions, so that Grandfather's blessings might be shared more freely. There are secret plagues from old night in these containers, and virulent infections culled from crumbling bones of long-dead Eldari.
He patted one of the canisters fondly.
And with these raw materials and his aid, I have made wonders and horrors undreamt of by even the most dropsome of my brothers. Plagues that would devour even the rubbery flesh of Grandfather's children.
Demons are not susceptible to mortal plagues,
Savona scoffed. Korag nodded enthusiastically.
No, they are not. And yet I have seen the results myself. That is what he offers me, child. In his shadow I grow pleasingly feculent.
And what does he get out of it?
Were you not listening? Plagues, child. Swift plagues that can ravage entire systems at impossible rates.
He chortled.
Oh, his mind is a thing of broken beauty. Even Abaddon cannot conceive of genocide on such a scale. It is not war to our chief apothecary, but simply pest control.
He shook his head.
Imagine it! A great silence falling all at once across a system. A sector. Every imperfect thing snuffed out like a candle flame. And then, and then, a new beginning.
His new men,
Savona said, trying to grasp the scale of it. Even at her most savage, she had never contemplated something so coldly monstrous.
Are they immune to it?
Oh, I imagine so. He keeps track of my improvements and develops vaccines and inoculations aplenty. So I must work all the harder to brew up something that will eat away at even the hardiest of his creations. A fine game, don't you think?
Yes,
she said, more softly than she'd intended. Her flesh crawled as she took in the stacks of canisters and the humid stink of so much gathered death. Korag laughed at her.
And why do you serve him, Savona of the Ruptured Skein?
She thought about it for a moment before answering. It was a question she had often considered in the quiet moments between bloodlettings. There were many answers she could give. Fabius's patronage was the surest path to leadership of the 12th. By serving him, she was protected from those who might otherwise seek her head, just for who and what she was. But the truth of it was something far simpler. Loyalty to Fabius promised that which she had been seeking since she had first set foot on the path of the Dark Prince. She smiled.
"He keeps things interesting,"